you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Greetings, citizens of Earth and all beings, both extraterrestrial and interdimensional. My name is Danny Roth, and this is Who Won the Week, Sci-Fi Wire's podcast dedicated to the top stories from the week in geek. I am joined this week by my co-hosts and friends, the Blur Girl, Kara Mahorn, Sci-Fi Wire's own editor-in-chief, Adam Swiderski.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Wow. Here we are. We are all ready to do a podcast, and then each run our own separate ways because it's Thanksgiving weekend, and that means we're all already exhausted. A lot of sleeping not happening, a lot of last-minute packing gone sideways.
I'm thankful that this podcast still exists.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you really?
Yeah, man.
Thanks.
It's, you know, it's good to have a reason to get up in the morning, and this is it. This is all I have.
Yeah. Recording on a Wednesday, assuming that probably not a ton of wild stuff is going to happen over Thanksgiving. And the thing is that some stuff already happened. There's things to discuss, stuff to talk about. There's
interesting start to the holiday.
Yeah, it sure is. There's controversies and rumors and trailers and controversies and rumors about the trailers. Just a lot to say. But before we do that, we do this thing at the top of every single show where we talk about things that we're personally geeking out about. It's been a 156, 155, whatever episodes. Adam, should we keep doing it?
I'm thankful for this feature on the show. I think we should keep doing it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm glad that we could keep it going with the turkey and the. Anyway, do you have any turkeys that you're going to pardon? As editor-in-chief of Sci-Fi Wire?
I pardon no turkeys.
Oh.
They will all go in my stomach.
Wow.
Yeah. No mercy.
Harsh. All right.
Strike hard, strike fast, no mercy, sir.
Yeah. Karen, what's winning your week? I'm just going to...
Honestly, okay. The one thing that's winning my week is that I finally actually upgraded my Wi-Fi service. I've actually completely become unplugged from like network television now. Like this just happened this week. I have all these apps that I pay for separately, a la carte. I'm going to see if I can afford to do this in the new year. But in order to do it properly, you have to have really fast internet. So I did upgrade and it's exciting. And I'm going to need that because, by the time this airs, Thanksgiving will be actually... We should be recovering from it, but I'm kind of stressed out because my family's coming for Thanksgiving, and this is not relaxing. So I am very happy for this high-speed internet. And it's funny because I tweeted this out yesterday. I'm going to remind everybody this holiday season that, you've gained weight, and hi, you don't have kids yet are not actual greetings. We're going to ask everybody out there to stick to the, hey, it's great to see you. We miss you. We love you. And move forward from there. Yeah, that's personal. But I'm going to be all right with spiked eggnog and everything. I'm going to be fine.
Yeah. Okay. That's the way to do it. Adam, what about you?
Well, it's not really a new thing, but last week we were, of course, talking about the passing of Stan Lee. And while we were talking, another announcement was made of someone who passed away, which is William Goldman, who wrote one of, in my opinion, the best movies ever, which is The Princess Bride, and among other things. But obviously was a big influential person in the art of screenwriting and everything like that. But just maybe go back and revisit The Princess Bride once again. And, you know, there are not a ton of timeless movies that completely hold up, especially in genre, because a lot of it is dependent on special effects and things look dated after a while. And you look back and you're like, oh, that, you know, Freddy's carrying sticks down the street. That's not really his arms long and, you know, whatever. But The Princess Bride, for me anyway, is one of those movies that none of it is dependent on special effects. I mean, I guess the biggest thing you have are the rodents of unusual size. But everything else is just in the writing and the acting and the direction, which are all, in my opinion, outstanding. And it was just fun to review. I hadn't watched that movie in a long time, even though it's kind of something I've watched a million times. And it was
I only watched that movie during holidays.
Oh, really?
I feel like it's one of those things that it's like, oh, Princess Bride. Yeah, let's watch that.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of people who, even though the movie's been out like forever, I think there's more people who know quotes from it and don't know that the quotes are from that movie.
Oh, yeah.
Than, you know, that he was responsible for.
I mean, just the performances in that film.
Andy Patinkin.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. Mandy, I mean, the freaking Wallace Shawn walks away with the movie the whole time he's on screen.
Was it Cary Elwes?
Cary Elwes, yeah. Cary Elwes is big star moment other than Robin Hood Men in Tights. And
yes, unlike some other Robin Hoods, I can speak with an English accent.
Which, by the way, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but it was on Netflix recently, which, wow, is that? Speaking of movies that have not aged well.
Oh.
There is one. But yeah, I just revisited The Princess Bride as my little personal tribute to William Goldman, who passed away last week.
No, and I just got a Blu-ray re-release, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
Nice.
So if you like some physical media. Yeah, I believe there's some good stuff on there. I believe it's an Arrow release. So yeah, it's probably some good stuff on there. Cool.
I mean, everybody, Chris Sarandon is in it, and freaking, what's that guy's name? Oh, God, it's escaping me.
Andre the Giant.
Christopher Guest.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, Andre the Giant, of course.
It's weird. It's one of those
one of the best performances ever by anyone ever.
And it's one of those movies that, like, just like you were going through those names, that you sit there and you go, oh, God, I forgot he was in them.
Yeah.
Billy Crystal.
Billy Crystal.
Yeah, everybody, basically. Yeah.
It is a who's who.
Yeah, and just really clever and really fun and really heartfelt and, you know, just fun to revisit that and pour one out. I did not actually pour one out because I don't want to mess up my floor, but I spiritually poured one out for William Goldman while watching that film. So there you go.
Wow.
We want to know what you're geeking out about, Danny.
Adam does.
I personally.
Wow. Whoa. Well, for Karima's behalf, then, I will speak at length. So, for one thing, I was writing a script, which I'm going to go and read for another podcast, about the year 1998, a banner year. But mostly it was just so that I could listen to the music of 1998. So good.
I don't remember what game happened in 1998.
Oh, it's so
Buffy, I was in a down place musically.
Buffy
because
slept
that
off.
Was.
Oh, so that is a big nerd thing. So, yeah, that was like the thing, which if you listen to any of the Amazon Alexa podcasts, this is like a preview for it. But yeah, so January opened with Buffy the Vampire Slayer moving from Mondays to Tuesdays.
She slept with Angel.
So they aired two episodes in a row, and the two episodes were Surprise and Innocence. And before that, Buffy was not a really popular show. It was, just a Creature of the Week kind of thing. The first season had not really taken off. And then, Buffy sleeps with Angel. Angel turns evil. And it was sort of the biggest TV moment of the year and sort of redefined. It gave you a definition of what WB television was going to be, and it gave every other network a thing to rip off. I think it is really sort of, if you were going to point and say this is where Joss Whedon sort of became super influential, Surprise and Innocence is where it starts. Because Murray Noxon wrote Surprise and he wrote Innocence, if I remember that correctly. And they're both still extremely relevant. But also, you know, like Lauryn Hill released,
The Education of Lauryn Hill.
Yep, that came out that year.
You know what else came out that year?
The music is good.
I don't know what he's calling himself, Diddy, and that Jimmy Page thing for Godzilla.
Yep.
Like, come with me.
Yeah, because God's 1998 Godzilla came out that year.
Nope, that didn't happen.
Yikes.
Yeah, it did.
Lost in Space came out in 1998. Whew. It sure did.
It was a weird time for pop culture.
And Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston sang There Can Be Miracles for the Prince of Egypt soundtrack. Uh-huh. Mariah Carey and Whitney Houston together at last. RIP to Whitney Houston. But so that happened. And also I saw the movie Cam, which is on Netflix. It is a horror movie about being a cam girl and sex work. And I have never seen a horror movie from the perspective of a sex worker before. They put it up at Alamo Drafthouse. They brought the writer and the director and the producer out. They did a Q&A, and I went because my friend Jordan Searles was hosting the Q&A. And I had no designs on whether I thought it was going to be good or bad or whatever. I hadn't heard anything about it other than Yeah, it's a sex worker and a horror movie. And I said, okay, I've seen 1980s movies. There's plenty of people having, I don't know, is it like that? No.
You know what's really funny? If you look at some of the posters at Alamo Draft House downtown Brooklyn, mm-hmm. you can see some of those vintage ones
yeah.
that look like they have the same theme.
Yeah, but this is very different because it is, so the pitch is there's a woman and she is a cam girl and she's trying to, there's a website that she's trying to work her way up. She's trying to get into like the top 50. Then, she's trying to be one of the top cam girls. And one day she tries to log into her account and she can't. And it keeps kicking her out. And then she looks at the thing and it says that she's live. And she looks and there she is live in her house, but she's not live in her house. And somehow, some way, something has taken over her life and is becoming more successful than she was. And she's trying to understand how it's happening. And it is surprisingly effective. And I definitely have not seen a horror movie that stars a sex worker in this way. And it's on Netflix now. Highly recommend it. I really genuinely had not, I felt I was sleeping on it because I even got an email from somebody being like, hey, do you want to talk about this on Sci-Fi Wire? And I was like, And now I wish I had written and said, yes, I was a fool. It's a very good movie.
Okay. So that's kind of just did.
Yeah, I guess in a way I eventually got around to it. Yeah. With the power of podcasting.
And actually somewhere there's a Danny Roth listening to this podcast going, I didn't do that podcast.
That sounds very believable.
Yeah.
I went to sleep at 4 a.m. So that person is me. I'm not actually here right now. Most of me is not here. But hey, you want to talk about the news?
Sure. Break it down.
All right. Hey, Adam, do you want to talk about this Bill Maher Stanley thing?
Why, sure. I would love to.
Great. As you can see, I'm so enthused about it.
Yeah, I know. I kind of forced us to have this conversation because there's a couple things I think about it that I wanted to put out there. But the gist is that Bill Maher, mm-hmm. notorious rabble rouser in terms of comedy and trying to speak on political things and cultural things, mm-hmm. Hosts the show Real Time with Bill Maher on HBO. Put out a blog post in the wake of Stanley's death that was ill-received by most, in which he basically said it's crazy that everybody's mourning Stan Lee so much because the guy wrote kids' funny books and we all should have grown out of that a long time ago, and the fact that everybody's freaking out about this is really stupid, and that's why, I mean, he tied it to, you know, a larger cultural malaise and why we elected Donald Trump for, you know, your opinion on that may vary, but Bill Maher obviously didn't think it was a good thing and was blaming the, I guess what we would call the, I don't want to call it the infantilization of society, but more like the adolescization, the eternal adolescence in which we've all...
the sophomoric nature, let
yeah,
us say.
Yeah, I guess. In his opinion, the idea that, you know, people who still digest pop culture that was ostensibly originally created for kids are in this state of arrested adolescence that is causing them to not be functional adults in society in the way Bill and his generation were. And, you know, it was really... So here's the thing. Everything he said about Stan Lee was horrible and stupid. And the guy had been dead for less than a few days. And, like, it was just really... And honestly, like, if you look at the legacy and the impact on culture that Stan Lee has had versus Bill Maher, I think there's a pretty wide gap there. So it's pretty rich for him to be saying that. But I got into this a little bit last week when we talked about She-Ra, is that I think there is a point to be made about adults taking entertainment too seriously. Because I think a lot of people do. And it's like, it's not saying you can't love things and you can't be fans of things. Obviously, sci-fi, we're all about fandom. And that's, you know, we're all about that. But like, the idea of it becoming obsessive or where this stuff is sacred and sacrosanct and can't be touched or it really ruins your life and makes you angry. Like, that type of thing, I can totally see that point. And if that's what he was trying, if there was one kernel to take out of what he said from me that I could say, okay, maybe that's a good point, it's that. I think that, you know, and I got into this discussion with somebody too, because they, you know, I have a friend who is something of a curmudgeon, and he was like, yeah, I agree with Bill Maher here, and not about Stan Lee, but about just the general idea of adults still reading comic books and taking comic book movies seriously, et cetera. And, you know, what I said is I think it's all about balance. Like, if all you read is, if all you ever read is comic books, yeah, I think that's a problem. And no offense, and like, to people, but
unless it's
just
your
like,
job.
No, but no, still, but even still, like, there's news out there. There's magazine features. There's fiction. There's, you know, great works of literature, whatever. And I'm not saying you have to have a curriculum, but like, having but I'd say the same thing about someone who only ever read historical fiction. If all you ever read was historical fiction novels, I think that's bad. Expand your horizons. There's so much great work out there. And so, yeah, I think that there is an element there to be said of that. Please, you know, this stuff is great, and I love it, and I love reading it and watching it and going to Marvel movies, but it doesn't mean that I can't also enjoy, like, cinema of the high, you know, like a Paul Thomas Anderson film or whatever, you know. I think that that's what Bill Maher missed, is that so many, none of, honestly, the adults that I know who are into this stuff are only into this stuff at the exclusion of all else. They can't carry on an intellectual conversation, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's just become part of the fabric overall. And that's the point that I think he misses. But I do agree that there is an element in culture, and especially on the internet now, of people treating this stuff as sacred, and that's unhealthy. And I think it's, you know, we can look at, like, so a lot of the stuff that sprung out of Gamergate and all that crap. And you know, it's as tying into this larger story. So bad on Bill Maher for all the things he said about Stan Lee, especially, God, it was on Veterans Day, and Stan Lee is a World War II veteran. It's like, come on, man.
I think he started enough right, though, that he's a rabble rouser.
Yeah, that was his whole point. And that's fine. And, you know, I'm giving him the attention he wants, and not, you know, the Twitterverse laid into him far more eloquently than I am here. And, you know, Neil Gaiman shot back and everything. So, you know, it's kind of a tempest in a teapot, but I think that there's a point to be made there, but I think it was just a really badly made point.
Yeah, it was horribly executed. But then again, this is just me personally. I don't really expect much more out of him. I personally think that he is a rabble rouser. He knew the internet would come for him. And I honestly think, and I was saying this to people, you're giving him more press than he's had, like, literally in probably years. And I think that was the point. And maybe that's just me being cynical about why people drop things when they do and how they do, in social media, or like you said in his blog. But completely agree. All that stuff he said about Stanley, inappropriate. Just, I don't think anybody here is just disagreeing with that. The I think the really frustrating thing is that it was really weird. You mentioned Comicsgate, and the Comicsgaters, are there any left? I'm confused. I'm still figuring that out. And the rest of the comic reading general public, or movie going general public, all seem to come together though for once,
right,
in the hatred of
Bill Maher.
And I think it's interesting because that was from looking, sort of taking a step back and taking a look at it. I found that fascinating. The first time in my timeline in a long time, I saw people from, what do they say, opposite sides of the aisle, agreeing, which was very, very interesting.
Everyone can agree Bill Maher sucks.
Right. Exactly. Sort of like the enemy of my enemy for a moment is possibly maybe my friend or my ally. But I'm not taking him seriously. But at the same time, I don't think do I read comic books? Yes. Is this part of how I make my living? Yes. But it's not the be all end all. Like, if they changed Glimmer's outfit, I am literally not going to lose my mind. And also, I'm wondering whether or not the average person is losing their mind either, or whether that's just how they want to appear on social, so they also get the clicks and the hits. So, I mean, I just kept thinking that everybody was just sort of capitalizing on this moment, which was sad. They were capitalizing on somebody's death. And that's the first thing I thought of when I heard the news. What did you think, Danny?
I don't want to give it any breath. That's it.
That's fair.
That's it. Like, I looked at it and I was like, no. Nah. I just got nothing to say about it. And the thing is, honestly, like, I'm coming at it from a place where I don't like Bill Maher. I don't like what he says about religion. I don't like what he says about a lot of things. I don't like what he says about specifically Muslims. I don't, you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. And that's not the podcast for it, but like, I'm not going to come
You're
at,
just not a fan of
I'm
his
just
spirit.
Not going to come at Bill Maher from a positive place. You sure. know what I mean? Like, that's just facts.
You don't want to give him any airtime.
Yeah, that's like, and that's the thing. Like, I don't want to give him airtime, and I definitely don't want to have, like, because if I do, someone's going to be like, yeah, but you hate Bill Maher. And that's right. I just, I mean, like, I don't know him, but like, most of the words like, that come out of his mouth are things that make me pretty angry.
Right.
So I just, you know what I mean? Like, that's not for me.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have to spend a ton of time on
yeah,
this topic.
No, I mean,
just
like,
wanted to.
Yeah, no, for sure.
My thoughts there.
I was not going to, just because I don't want to talk about it, I mean, I'm going to deny you the right to.
But we're
going to
spend the rest
piece.
Of this podcast talking about nothing but comics and movies, just to let everybody
yeah,
know.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. You know, that's right. There's a thing. There's a rumor. We'll get to like trailers and stuff in a minute. But so Doctor Who. Y'all heard about this show?
Yeah.
Been around for like 55 years. A bunch of dudes play this part. A lady plays the part now. Got a new showrunner. People watching it. They had an episode about Rosa Parks. They had an episode where there were aliens as Indy was getting separated between India and Pakistan. They had an episode about Amazon. It's been kind of a weird season. They're trying some things out. And this week, news started coming through Starburst and I think a couple other websites that are pretty specific to talking about Doctor Who news that try to sort of avoid gossip unless it's got some kind of truth to it. And the word on the street is that Chris Chibnall and the BBC are not getting along, that he does not want to do full seasons, that they want him to do a full season next year, that he has made a compromise to do a half season. But he wants to bow out, and Jodie Whittaker, supposedly her take on it is if Chris goes, I go. So there is a possibility that we are only going to get a season and a half of the first ever woman doctor. That is the word on the street.
And I've seen that many places, and I, cause at first I was like, this is just, you know, like you were the first person I heard it from, but it makes me sad in that the meaning behind it is not going to be, oh, wow, the writing didn't work out. Oh, it wasn't a good creative team. Oh, it, you know, maybe this was the wrong director. It's going to be, oh, well, that's why we shouldn't have had a woman doctor.
And that's the thing. Part that that's why. Well, here's how
no,
I know.
That's what people
here's
will
how
say,
I know that that's true. Because the reason that I heard about this stuff is because I would go to YouTube.com. Said the full website,
/.
Yeah. Excuse me. And already, that's what's coming up in my feed is people saying, Doctor Who was too PC. These, you know, a woman should never have been Doctor Who. Doctor Who's going to get canceled. You know, this is what's wild to me is people are crowing about it. You know what I mean? People are excited that the show's not doing well. They say, I hate this season, and I'm so glad that there's bad news coming out. And to me, to a lesser extent, that's like, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't happy that Donald Trump was the president, but when he got elected, I wasn't like, gosh, hope he does a bad job. Hope he destroys the fabric of American democracy. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, hope he figures it out. You know what I mean? Like, that's, you know, like, why would you, once it's already happened, why would you be sitting here going, hope it fails? And then when you hear things are maybe not going well, that you're like, yeah, that's great. That's messed up. What's wrong with you? Like, don't you want the show that you've loved your whole life to be good, even if they're going in a direction you're not sure about?
When we say people are saying this, like, would you say there's a core, like the majority of people
saying
this?
I'm saying that there are enough YouTube videos that have got hundreds of thousands of views to, in my mind, warrant that, yes. I mean, yeah, it's the internet, but,
right.
You know. But, yeah, I mean, yes, there are people that are having this response to it. That's
that doesn't surprise me. I mean, there are people who are saying they hope Star Wars fails because they didn't like The Last Jedi. This is the new thing. It's like, this thing so much, I want to destroy it.
No, not just that, though. It could, like, if it's listened to, which there's precedence for this, it could be like, well, let's just go back to a male doctor, make the fans happy until we figure this out. When that what I'm saying is that might not be the problem with the show, and the knee-jerk reaction would be, well, let's just give them
this. That's what I'm saying. I want to dispel
this. But the ratings have been good, right? They're not...
Well, this is what sort of drives me crazy is that people will take not even news, rumor. They'll look at the text that has been said by the BBC. They'll look at the stuff that comes out word for word by the publications that are talking about the rumor. And then they will say factually, this is what's happening. And so they'll say, for example, this is what's happening is that the BBC and Chris Chibnall are fighting about the PC nature of the show. And it's, you know, either Chris Chibnall is trying to make it too PC, or the BBC is trying to make it too PC. You know what I mean? And they'll, like, all these conversations will come out as though these are facts.
Now, just
as though
to, this just is to what's answer Adam's question, though,
happening.
To answer Adam's question, right as of this moment, this season has 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, an 8.7 out of 10 on IMDb. TV.com has it 9 out of 10. And this past weekend, it pushed past, it was dropping below several Sunday shows, and it just bumped back ahead of Walking Dead. Which is not saying that it's number one, but it's still not failing.
It's doing well.
It's
so
doing,
this is
doing
like,
and that's the other thing is people go, oh, the ratings have gone down from the first episode. That happens every season.
Sure. And, but this is the thing is that we are, the three of us here are like neck deep in this internet culture, right? And the thing about it is that the guy on YouTube has as much of a megaphone as anybody, you know, because of the nature of that medium and the nature of the internet as a medium to distribute content. While, yes, there are several videos with hundreds of thousands of views, we don't know how many of those views were hate views. We don't know how many people viewed it to disagree. We don't know how many people, like, maybe the guy just sat there and put the bobbing bird thing from The Simpsons on there so it could press the refresh button over and over again, you know? I mean, and so that's what, when it comes to the network, I don't tend to think, and maybe I'm wrong in this modern era, but working for a TV network and having seen this, it's if the ratings are good, people can complain all they want. It's not going to, the network's going to be like, great, we're going to keep doing it. You know, like people complain, not to tie back to sci-fi, people complained about wrestling on sci-fi forever when we had it. And wrestling, and so you guys have wrestling, meh. But you know what? Tons of people watched it. So they kept renewing the contract. And I think that, like, I don't want to, while I of course, I recognize that it stinks that there are people out there saying things like, oh, I hope the show fails because the female doctor, 2PC, blah, blah, blah. I expect that. I mean, that's the nature of everything now. Everybody wants, there's somebody out there that wants everything to fail because they think it sucks. Like, it's just the world we live in as fans and with fandom. The question then becomes, like, what is the dominant narrative among the fans? What is the, and from what I've seen, the dominant narrative is more positive around the show than the people who are still upset about Jodie Whittaker. I don't, maybe I'm not running in the right circles, but that's just what, in the general sense,
I think you're
seen.
Right. I think what people are responding to were some of the, there has been a ratings drop for the show itself, mm-hmm. but compared to other shows, it's doing pretty right. well. So it premiered at like almost 11 million views and it hasn't really ticked up past six. Since, and I think people are trying to find any excuse. Now, yeah. At the end of the day, I read sites that aren't like all about this is, you know, the fans screaming, yelling. What people don't realize is the same thing happened. And I think that true Doctor Who fans, and Danny can help me with this. I'm pretty sure that when Rose premiered I feel like it was 2005, maybe 2006.
2005.
It there was the same problem. Like ratings kind of dropped, but everybody wanted to learn about the storyline.
There was a lot of stuff was happening when that dropped. Actually, one of the things
Peter Capaldi, but he still.
I mean,
you know,
look, I will say, yeah, there is always something. When Doctor Who first came out, the big story was that a lot of people in Britain were mad because Rose Tyler was dating Mickey Smith,
right?
And because, you know, let us set aside the idea that America is the racist place and everybody else is cool. The UK was also mad about this interracial relationship.
I was going to say, for people who don't know, it was an interracial couple.
Yeah,
on the show.
Yeah, because Noel Clark is black and Billy Piper is not. And so, yeah, that was a big thing that was happening. Yeah, people have a tendency to have opinions about Doctor Who because it's this big seminal series. But yeah, it's just, to me,
I'm curious though about what you first brought up though. Why? Because that part does seem to be true. There do seem to be some creative issues.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's like, this
and
is the
Peter
thing
Capaldi
that
went through
about.
This and he did leave. So I'm curious
and that's,
as to
yeah,
what
yeah,
the
like,
real
the thing
creative
is, like,
differences
places
are.
That have been talking about this stuff, like these outlets, were the same ones that predicted when Matt Smith was going to make the announcements that he was leaving right before. Yeah, same thing with Peter Capaldi. These people have been largely correct. And, you know, I will say this. There are things that I like about this new season of Doctor Who, But I don't know a lot of people who are sitting there talking about how this is the greatest season ever. Most people are saying it feels as though we've had this one big leap forward, which is casting a woman in the role. And so, for some reason, as a result, it feels as though everything else has been a little bit by rote. Everything else has been very basic and everything has been a little bit by the numbers. And the thing that I have noticed is that the Doctor has taken a much more passive role in a lot of these episodes, especially the ones where they go to the past, both in the Rosa Parks episode and Demons in the Punjab, is that they can't make changes to the timeline. They keep doing this bit where they've got to let it happen as it happens. And I don't, it's so, you know what it is? It's so different from what I think people were used to. It's hard for me to process how I actually feel about it because I got used to the bombastic Russell T. Davies and Stephen Moffat eras where the Doctor was you know, where they would say stuff, you know, the name Doctor, we get that because of you, you know. You know, like, what would, if you go around, you know, destroying and changing things, what might that word become? And that is a big part of what the show was from 2005 to 2017, is that the Doctor had become a character that was of action, that was making these wide sweeping changes and giving huge long-winded speeches every goddamn episode.
You see, these are the discussions I'll have because they're creative about.
And now that stuff isn't happening anymore. So it is fundamentally a very different show.
I wonder if it's the nature of those particular episodes, though, because can you imagine the super hot takes there would have been if it was like the white woman came in and fixed things for Rosa Parks,
yeah,
and fixed things for Indians in the Punjab.
I mean, like, that's,
I completely agree.
So I wonder if the Doctor's more passive role in those things was also influenced by a desire to be sensitive to that. I don't know. I mean, we're still early in the season, so we haven't seen the climax of what's early in the season anymore.
It's almost over now.
But what Adam is saying that was absolutely right, though, that in terms of what these creative differences are, the way TV works, they've got 8 episodes in the can.
Yeah.
They're just all in post-production right now. Mm. So whatever creative differences they're having have to be about the end of the season.
Yeah.
Or the starting of the next. Like, I'm wondering what the art issues
Well, the question is how early on, because it could have been that they were struggling
from
the very beginning, and it's only really starting to come out now.
I mean,
you
the
don't
thing
know.
Is, too, like, you know, I, up, down, whatever. I mean, there were stretches of Matt Smith that I thought were kind of rote and by the numbers and boring, honestly. Like,
sure.
And I stuck around because I like the show and everything, but... I don't know. It'll just be a shame if that happens. I don't have any particular, like, oh, he's my favorite writer in the world and I hope it works out. But obviously for Jodie Whittaker, I would really love to see her stick around as long as she'd like to. Honestly.
It's just a drag, man. That it will make me really blue if the first ever woman to play that part in an official canon capacity only lasts an abbreviated amount of time, you know, that lasts barely, you know, like just a little over a Chris Eccleston period of time when everybody else did, you know, 3 full seasons and a couple specials,
right?
You know, because David Tennant and Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi all did a minimum of 3 years, and for her to cut out before then is not a great look. It's a drag. It doesn't look good. And I will also say this, ratings be damned. The BBC has been having these problems, these conflicts. They didn't have huge, huge issues with Russell because Russell was paired up with Julie Gardner. And the two of them were kind of pals. They were sort of on a team together. Stephen Moffat never had that. So it was always well known that, you know, he was in a row or whatever with the BBC higher-ups. And if Chris Chibnall is now doing that, and even more so to the point that he's leaving early and the doctor that he brought in, the first woman doctor, is also going to peace out at the same time, BBC might say, this ain't worth it. And that to me is the biggest. Can you imagine if, because this is, you know what I mean? What if the show goes out on this note? What
I don't
if they
know
just
that
cancel
it, would,
it straight
no,
up?
Won't.
No,
it's,
I don't,
it's their biggest
I don't
thing stateside by far. So I don't know. I mean, I know they're a British company and they serve the UK, but in terms of, and they have popular shows there and everything.
That's who's international. You're right.
But yeah, like in terms of the biggest thing that they are identified with, it would be a PR nightmare for them, I would imagine.
I hope so. I mean, I hope that it would be enough that it would make it so that it would not be worth it for
them.
And
I mean, you know, if Jodie leaves, just cast a woman of color in the part after that and we're all good.
Sounds great.
There you go.
I would love for them to do that. Yeah. I guess I just don't, you know, I get so nervous about these things because, you know, I don't run Doctor Who.
That's true.
Wish I did.
I don't.
Oh, wow.
I'm just kidding.
Remember that time that you said that I should be the doctor?
Yes, but that doesn't mean you run it.
Oh, okay. I think I would be a good showrunner for Doctor Who, and that's about it. I could do that. I definitely know that show. Anyway.
But let's just hope everybody, you know, cooler heads prevail.
Yeah, yeah. I would like for everybody to chill. Here's what I would like. If it's this way, the last word I heard on it was Chris Chibnall wants to leave in 2019, but the BBC has kind of got him by the balls and are saying, hey, listen, if we can't get a new suitable team to take over in 2020, just do the other half of the season and then peace out. So I would hope that we would get a full number of episodes for a second season and that they would really get it figured out for who was going to take over for Chris and who was going to take over for Jody, and then the show would continue after 2020. I would rather that than have her get cut off halfway through a season and Chris leave halfway through and just have it be so sour. I just want them to be able to tell one last good solid story arc and then move on. Because if that's it, because the thing is, if they've got a full season, if they got another full 10 episodes or whatever, plus a New Year's / Christmas / whatever special on top, then that gives them ample opportunity to make sure that they are going to tell a worthwhile story for this incarnation of the Doctor so that people will not feel so sad about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about how it happens, right? I mean, my favorite Doctor of the modern era only lasted 1 year.
Yep.
And that's fine. But if Jodie Whittaker decided after two seasons or even one season that she was done and that was her decision and it was just based on what she wanted, fine. You know, it's a bummer and I would like to see her stick around, but whatever. But if it happens because they just can't work stuff out behind the scenes, that's when it's a drag.
Yeah, and the thing is, yeah, you bring up your favorite Doctor of the modern era being Chris Eccleston.
Yeah.
And nobody wants what happened to Chris to happen to anybody else.
Right.
He was blacklisted by the BBC for a while. He couldn't get a job. That's why he came over and you saw him doing random stuff in America for a little while to sort of make ends meet because, yeah, the BBC didn't want him. He didn't really want the BBC, and it was ugly. And when people ask him questions now, he's kind of started to open up about it. He's kind of chill, but he's still very guarded. Just think, that was 2005. It's been a dozen years, and he's still feeling pretty sensitive about it. And Jodie Whittaker has really opened up herself to a lot of criticism and a lot less safety because people do get unnaturally angry about the idea of a woman in that role. And yeah, I mean, she's demonstrably less safe than she was before she took that part.
Yeah.
I just don't want her to have, you know, a decade and a half of misery. That just sounds so like,
yeah,
you know, if it's going to be something that isn't perfect, could we at least have her leave the show on decent terms, her and Chris, you know, move on and get stories that they, I was going to say it chapped my ass, but it just made me sad.
Yeah.
It just made me sad.
Yeah. It's like, we have this great thing. Everybody's happy. Can we just work it out?
Yeah.
For the good of the world.
Jodie Whittaker is great at this. Chris Chibnall loves Doctor Who, is a lifelong fan, just like Russell and Steven before him. Can we just find a way to make this work, guys? Can we just figure it out? Please. Anyway, now that you and I have said that, Adam, I'm sure it will happen.
Yeah, exactly. The BBC listens to this podcast
every week.
And ignore the angry YouTube people. That's all.
Yeah. We're the ones to listen to. We're the right ones. Anyway, so that's a news thing. And now, trailers. You want to talk about Aquaman? Because that's the one that's just a trailer and not a trailer plus.
Sure.
What'd you guys think about this? The final
trailer.
Yeah, I didn't know it was coming, and then all of a sudden there it was.
It told me some interesting things about the story I didn't know before.
Such as,
I was kind of under the impression that Aquaman had grown up basically not knowing about his heritage and not being engaged with Atlantean culture, et cetera, et cetera. And what we saw here was him growing up training with Willem Dafoe's character, whose name I can't remember off the top of my head. But
nudist. I could be saying it wrong.
Something like that.
But
it looks like nudist, but it's not.
Yeah, I know.
But anyway, so it kind of broaches the idea that he's been brought up knowing about his Atlantean heritage and about Atlantis and all this different stuff. And we see him, you know, learning to swim like an Atlantean, not a human, and all these different things. And that I thought that was interesting. I didn't know that angle to the story was going to be a part of it. I thought he was kind of the reason Aquaman is the way he is with all his like, yo, bro, type of thing is because mm-hmm. he'd been brought up entirely human, and that's not the case. So that's interesting. It's weird. I like the way Black Manta looks, but I have no idea what he's doing in the story. Because 99% of the trailer is Atlantis, we're fighting Atlantis, and he's going to take over Atlantis. We got to find the Trident. And then, oh, by the way, there's Black Manta. He's here too. You know, and it's just like.
And yeah, when you hear them saying there's a war coming, you think that the war is, because all the war scenes with multiple people, which is what I think of as a war, are underwater.
Right.
All the other fight scenes with Manta seem to be one on one, or him, like him, Arthur and Black Manta, or Mira. It's like.
So I worry that he's the Venom war? From Spider-Man 3 of this film. You know, it's like they wanted to throw in Black Manta because he looks cool, but
the real Electro.
But he's not part of the real story. The real story is this other thing, and I don't know. We'll see. It was probably my favorite trailer they've put out so far. Interestingly enough, I still don't know how thrilled I am for the movie. The underwater stuff still hasn't really. The idea of people like talking and having whole scenes underwater, but by the way, we know it's underwater because he swings the trident and there's a little trail, you know, of bubbles. But that's the only thing that makes it kind of an underwater.
His hair moves.
Amazing. Yeah, I don't know how over the goofiness of that I'm able to get at this point, but we'll see. I mean, you know, the movie's coming soon, so like I said, I think it was my favorite trailer so far.
I mean, I'm a James Wan fan in terms of action. You know, I haven't watched Saw because horror, but in terms of the work that he's done in terms of action and stuff, I think the action scenes are gonna pay off. I wonder though if that's why we're seeing in the trailer, because you put your best scenes in the trailer, if why we've seen so many on land action scenes and not underwater ones. I too have the same surprise, like, oh, okay, so we're going with the. You're right. It does sound like nudist story. Nudist Voco, I think is his name. Willem Dafoe's character. I'm going to try and stop watching trailers and stuff about this and just go in with an open mind, because if I can fall down the rabbit hole of, wait, that character was in what? Wait, let me find that comic. Like, I know I can do that. So I'm actually going to try and pull back a little bit and not look at anything else until it actually drops. And then when we come back and see it, have a discussion. I just think it's funny that what's interesting is that there's so many actors, Dolph Lundgren, Willem Dafoe, Jaimin Huntsu, a lot of people who are in multiple movies like over this holiday season. And there's actors that I haven't seen in a while. Michael Beach is in this movie and we haven't seen him in the trailer, but I was just going through. He's actually an actor that I actually fell in love with way back on like ER. He's been like a side character in a lot of things. And he's always either the cop or the detective or the guy who's got your back. He's always that guy. I think it's going to be, because there's like no Marvel movie, this is supposed to be the movie of the season. I hope it lives up to it. They did a weird thing like they did with Wonder Woman and didn't do that many trailers at first and teasers. And then they kind of dropped them all in the past month. So that kind of makes me nervous, but then again, Wonder Woman paid off. So we'll see. I don't think Jason Momoa is not going to, hey, dude, because that's just what he does.
No, he is.
That's all he's going to do.
We've seen that in other trailers.
He can't help but do
that. This certainly seems, you know, it's going to be colorful, which is the big thing they've always knocked against the DC movies, is this washed out look, et cetera. But it's just interesting because the underwater stuff seems really, the comparison I draw almost is Thor Ragnarok. Right, which is when Marvel went full, what era that was, I can't remember. Yeah. Was it Silver Age, where it was like just like crazy psychedelic out there?
Well, I mean, they're just going for that Kirby.
So they did that with Ragnarok, and this is almost feels like that of the DC world, because we're going from this washed out thing to this colorful underwater thing where they've got these neon lights and everything.
And Mira's hair.
But the thing that Ragnarok did was that it didn't take that necessarily super seriously. Yeah. You were supposed to think the Grandmaster was a little ridiculous, you know, or a lot ridiculous. And so him having a mural of this Kirby art in the background from, you know, with all the crazy psychedelic visuals makes sense. And it works with the overall vibe of the movie. I don't know that that's going to happen with Aquaman, because all the neon stuff seems like it's really super like the Game of Thrones part of Sirius Houses of Atlantis and who's taking over stuff. who knows? We'll see. And maybe it'll work. I've been skeptical up to now, but I want to be pleased. I would like to walk out of there being like, yeah, that really worked well. What did you think of the trailer there, Danny?
I'm inspired to go back and read the full Geoff Johns run of Aquaman from when New 52 first started, because that was sort of one of those books, right, where it wasn't the big ones. You know, everyone was really talking about Scott Snyder's Batman run, Gail Simone doing Batgirl, Jeff Lemire doing Animal Man. Those were, you know, I mean, there were these top tier books that were getting all the attention, and then there were books that people really hated, and those were getting, you know, also attention for the opposite reason. And somewhere in the midst of all of that were a couple books that were better than people thought they were going to be, but they didn't get as much press. Aquaman was one of them. A lot of people were focusing on the fact that Geoff Johns was still doing Green Lantern, and Green Lantern was one of the only things that was basically still continuing its story, because Geoff Johns can do whatever Geoff Johns wants to do, and he wasn't interested in rebooting. But he did do a pretty interesting take, as I recall. I think I read the first five or six issues of that run, and now I just want to go back and rewatch it. And also, I'll tell you, here's how I'll know if the water scenes work for me. If I'm holding my breath nervously, because I just feel as though maybe these folks could breathe underwater but not me, then you know they got it. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, but that's how you know they will have achieved the realism of being underwater. And so I'll be like, that's how I'll know. But yeah, the trailer looks good, you know? I mean, it's so hard to judge trailers these days. Very rarely is a trailer something that really jumps at me. And even then, you know, you could love a trailer and the movie won't be good. But
it's like the cover of a comic.
Right.
Like, you totally fall in love with, you know, everything that you see, and then you go, and I mean, these days, Marvel's been doing this, not putting those scenes in the movie. Right. So,
I mean, it's funny. One of my friends just posted that, I guess it was the 20th anniversary this past week of the first Phantom Menace trailer coming out, which to me was, first of all, blew my mind that it's been that long. And secondly, I remember, that trailer was so exciting.
Yes.
I went to see The Waterboy in the theater because I heard that trailer was in front of it and it did not play. And next door was Enemy of the State. And I hear all these people cheering through the wall. I was like, damn it. They got the friggin' trailer. Anyway, so that's a perfect example of a trailer that sold the hell out of a movie that, in my opinion, didn't necessarily deserve it. So, yeah, I don't know. But on the other hand, these Aquaman trailers, like, I have not walked out of an Aquaman trailer like, yeah, I can't wait to see Aquaman. But that's not necessarily a bad thing either on the flip side.
I mean, DC, if they're putting out trailers where people who have been down on them are saying, I give it a look.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, you know, I mean, I don't, you know, for full transparency, there's plenty of movies that we see because we are obligated to see them.
Right.
You know, plenty of DC movies have been announced and have come out. You know, when Justice League came out, I said, I'm seeing this because I'm obligated to. I did not want to see that movie. I thought it was going to stink and I hated it. You know, that was my take on it. But I watched the Aquaman trailers and I go, ooh, I'm going to watch that. I don't know if it's going to be good, but I'm going to give it a shot. It looks like it's going to at least be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
James Wan shooting a shot. That's what I think. So the trailers all suggest to me that the man is shooting a shot. So I'll take a look.
Yeah. And Wonder Woman, I think, also reset my expectations a little bit. I mean, Justice League was its own thing because it was trying to mash all this stuff together. But for the individual films, you know, with that and the Shazam trailer that's been out, it was like, oh, that movie seems like it's different than I thought and going to be fun. My expectations have been reset a little bit, where I'm like, I'm not walking in
thinking the worst
or expecting, you know,
or expecting not to be impressed
or expecting even a certain pattern of things or a certain formula, you know, that it's, I think that Wonder Woman broke that in a lot of ways and it was a hit. And so you hope that DC and Warner Brothers learned their lesson from that. And it seems, I mean, Aquaman certainly doesn't look like anything they've done before.
Yeah.
So that in itself, it makes it a lot more interesting to me.
Anyway, so that's that trailer. And then I don't know if this will be something, there's a good chance that this thing we're going to talk about next is something you may not have heard about. It sort of depends on when this podcast finally lands. But there was a kind of a trailer in a way that dropped that was sort of a trailer to introduce the idea of the PG-13 Deadpool 2 movie. And it was a trailer that sort of showed that, yes, they went back and filmed some new things, that, yes, they are going to attempt to try and put that movie back out in theaters, see if they can make more money on it again, see if they can prove that, you know, Deadpool can be done at a PG-13 rating. And the way that they did that is they put out a trailer wherein, and this sort of goes back to something that you talked about at the top of the show, which is Princess Bride. Deadpool has kidnapped Fred Savage and is telling him the story. They're using the Princess Bride framing device to tell a more child-friendly version of Deadpool 2. And what makes that interesting is a bunch of things. One of them being, you know, is it going to work? And thereby, will they continue making Deadpool movies and will they all be PG-13?
And for people, for people who did not see this, it's basically Deadpool 2 is re-releasing a PG-13 Christmas special on December 12th. So this is what we're referring to. And the trailer dropped this week and it's had some interesting reactions.
Yes. So here is one reaction. And I will say, I know this person. This is an acquaintance that I've had for years, who works to some degree in the comic book industry. He tweeted on December 7th, 2017, so about a year ago, at Ryan Reynolds, if Marvel forces you to make a PG-13 Deadpool, just copy the framing device from The Princess Bride and have Deadpool censoring it for Fred Savage as a bedtime story. A kidnapped adult Fred Savage. There, I fixed it. So... I don't know how much to show exactly that. So that's it. And the other thing is that if you look, there's an article out there with an interview where someone went on the record saying this idea was something that Ryan Reynolds brought to the table and pushed very hard for. So this is an example of, did Ryan Reynolds steal an idea off of this dude's tweet? And if so, what does that mean?
And I say, as I always say, for my friends who like writing and putting long threads of ideas and possible movies on Twitter, stop it, because it is a public domain and this could happen.
Well, and the interesting thing is, I'm sure that guy who posted that wasn't thinking, I'm going to, you know, this is an idea that I would pitch to Fox. He was doing it kind of as a goof, I'm sure. I mean, he says they're fixed it. So he's just kind of joking around. But then to see it manifested on screen must have been... Yeah,
I don't want to speak on his behalf, but we talked about it last night. He's unhappy, you know. I mean, it makes him feel uncomfortable. But really, it was, and what he kept saying to me is, I think he probably saw it, forgot that he saw it, this being Ryan Reynolds, and then it sort of resurfaced in his brain, like crypto amnesia or something, I think is what it's called. And, you know, and then he thought it was his own idea.
I did not know it had a name.
Yeah, that is a thing. And
I've certainly experienced it. It's like where I've started writing a song and then...
You're like, oh, that is a song.
I go back and I hear something that I already knew. And I was like, wow, I just totally copied that song without even thinking about it.
Yeah. So that is a possibility. Yeah, I don't want to put this news story out as though this guy is like out to sue somebody. That is not what... I mean, as of when we spoke last night... On the topic, he was just thinking, hey, wouldn't it be nice if they sent me to like a premiere or something, just like hooked up something, like just like a cute little something.
And this is not just about like Danny and his friend. I actually had seen the tweet go viral.
No, and I'm sure that it will. Danny, I'm sure that this is going to make
Danny
the rounds.
Knew him. Yeah. So this is actually, it picked up a little bit of a...
I would be shocked. I would be shocked if people weren't talking about it. But it was, I looked at it and then do you ever have that moment where you look at a thing and you go, this seems like a big deal. This seems like a thing, but you have to go and double check. So I went into the Slack and asked our own Trent Moore, who happened to be on there because Trent Moore is a machine, is literally always working every second of the day and night. And I said, hey, Trent, is this a thing? I just sent him the tweet. I was like, does this seem like something to you? And Trent basically said, holy shit.
Yeah.
And that is not Trent. You know, he's not usually that guy. So that was sort of the reinforcement that it wasn't just me trying to defend a friend or see something that wasn't there. That is weird. It's a strange thing. And what I think is interesting, the dimension I find fascinating is, yeah, the reason that this is happening, the PG-13 thing is because, Disney owns these Fox properties now. And so that means that Disney's in this fight. So is Ryan Reynolds going to be able to say anything regardless? Or do you think that someone at Disney already saw this, came to Ryan Reynolds' house and said, if you value your continued existence, say nothing?
I think somebody's going to have to say something.
Do you think so?
If it gets especially if it gets picked up. I mean, it's I don't necessarily think it'll ruin Deadpool if he says nothing and it just becomes the narrative, dominant narrative becomes he stole this from this guy on Twitter. I mean, like, it would take much more than that, I think, to sink that movie franchise.
I agree.
But I don't know. And especially given who Ryan Reynolds is and has been online, you know, it's not like he's a person who's completely separated from that Twitter world.
But that's why I ask you the question about Disney, because Disney does change the game a little bit.
I suppose. But I also think they, on a certain level, have to let him be him in this process going forward. Like, I don't think they're going to be... I think this is a fun little experiment, but I don't think that we're going to see Deadpool 3 be PG-13. I can't, like, given the success that that franchise has had as an R-rated film, I don't know that you would want to mess with that success, you know, especially because that is one of the defining characteristics of the franchise so far, is that they can go over the top, they can go hyper-violent, et cetera, et cetera. So I have to imagine that he's going to say something at some point if this story picks up any steam, even if it's just to be like, my bad, guys. You know, I didn't see this.
What does my bad mean? That's the thing. I don't, you know, you can't put the genie back in the bottle that there's an interview out there saying Ryan Reynolds brought this idea to the table and pushed for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So at that point, what are you going to say? Well, Ryan Reynolds is actually like looking at his Twitter, or he's not really the one that's writing his tweets. That's, you know, then that wrecks his authenticity.
Right.
I will say that, in fact, has anybody covered it? Yes, we have.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. It went up today. As 2 hours ago, as of this recording, there is already an article written. So I don't know what the best response is going to be. And yes, Karam, I agree with you. And we said this before the podcast even started. You put something out on Twitter and it ain't yours no more. That's that. You know what I mean? So they can't, like, he can't really do anything. But at the same time, Ryan Reynolds is not going to roll in and say, yeah, I stole that idea. You can't do it. You know, that's not going to happen because that'll look terrible. I just don't know if they'll, do they have to say anything? And if they don't, will they just, because the thing is, if all you have to do at this point in this day and age is wait. Because aren't most people going to say, really? Maybe Ryan Reynolds saw your tweet? And then maybe he used your idea a little bit. Is that really going to be the thing that stays with people when the world is literally burning? That's the other thing.
Well, not even that. I mean, you look at like...
just wait until like another trailer drops, another creator dies.
I don't know the guy's real name, but he operates on Twitter, on social media, as the Fat Jew, right?
Oh, yeah. Gosh.
He stole content wholesale from people.
Yes.
And got caught.
On Instagram.
Got wholly caught and outed. And still has a career. He's still out there doing his thing. So
it's like everybody knows it and they just sort of accept it because he's curating or whatever. Basically, when he copied stuff, he didn't credit anybody.
Right. So, but the thing is that's, I think Danny's right. At the end of the day, even if Ryan Reynolds came out and said, yep, I stole it, I did it, you know, clink, clink, handcuff me, it would blow over, and when Deadpool 3 came out, people would go see it still in droves. I don't think he'll say that.
No, but I mean, even if he did, it could be a plot device at this point, the way Deadpool goes.
He'd be like, I didn't steal it. Deadpool did.
Yeah.
He's actually had a psychotic break, and now he has multiple, he has Deadpool as a personality.
Broke the page.
Yeah.
he has a second Deadpool personality living in his head.
Yeah, I mean, they got ads where he's got fake arms. You know what I'm saying?
Fake baby legs.
He could do whatever he wants.
Yeah,
he could do. Yeah, I don't know. It's wild. It is wild to me. That's why. Yeah, my philosophy is. Yeah, I think Disney will just say, keep your mouth shut. That's my guess.
I also think one of the reasons why they're doing this is because of Disney. Because everybody's been saying, "Oh, when the merger comes through, Deadpool's going to die."
Yeah.
So like.
Anyway, yeah. I mean, like, here's the thing. My hope is that this dude, Michael Vincent Bramley, said, send me to a premiere. Yeah, just send him to the premiere.
Send him a box of Deadpool stuff. And
you don't even have to say anything. Just like, you know what I mean? Like, slide into the DMs and be like, yo, what's your address? You know what I mean? And like, yep. And then hook it up. And you're like, this is a send dude that literally just popped out and was like, I am man, still a fan of the dude. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just, if you use my idea, could you just be like a little chill about it? Yeah. That's it. You know, if it was like, and that's the thing. I don't know if, like, again, I still think Disney, I'd be like, don't say anything. But I hope Ryan Reynolds is able to overpower that a little bit to be like, yeah, maybe I saw it and forgot. You know, I don't know Ryan Reynolds, but that's not out of the realm of possibility.
Right.
And just say, hey, man, my B, or, you know, or great minds think alike, whatever.
Right.
You know, you should come to the premiere, check it out. Like, glad hand, get a photo with me, whatever. Like, how much is that? How much money does that cost versus the amount of money they're going to make re-releasing this movie?
Right.
So just, you know what I mean? Like, that's negligible and it's good PR. So I hope if it was me, that's what I would be trying to do. You know, I would try to do something cool, try to be just be cool about it.
Right.
I just don't know if I trust Disney to be cool, honestly.
Hmm. I guess we'll find out.
All right. Anyway, that's it. We're going to cut out. Please enjoy your Thanksgiving. And you know, the best way to celebrate Thanksgiving is by subscribing to this podcast and leaving your 5-star review, and also checking out all the other Sci-Fi Wire podcasts like Strong Female Characters and The Phantom Files and all of the many podcasts we have dedicated to the sci-fi shows that go out every year. And please check out also the Amazon Alexa podcasts, including the one where Adam just kind of slow jams the news to you every day. Thank you all for listening. And before we wrap up, dear friends of mine, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me, Karima, the Blur Girl, TheBlerGurl, all over the interwebs, but mostly on Twitter and Instagram.
And you can find me, Adam Spodersky, on Instagram at RockTheFaces.
My name is Danny Roth, and you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Danny Ordinary. That is Danny with one N, Ordinary also with one N. This has been Who Won the Week. Thank you for winning our week. We'll see you again next week.